From the Sky News Centre at 6, it looks like the Lib Dems are the big winners after Labour and the Conservatives failed to make significant gains in England's local elections. Jeremy Corbyn's party didn't win many targets it was looking at, while the Tories managed to hold on in key areas. Labour MP Dan Jarvis has now also been elected mayor of the Sheffield City region. He thinks his party can win the next general election.
I do believe that. Any party of opposition has a tough job to do to persuade the public that they are electable. I think actually we've made very good progress. I think we had an excellent manifesto that we put to the public a year or so ago.
The Lib Dems have control of four more councils than before. UKIP collapsed. A man will go on trial next month, charged with planning to murder the Prime Minister. The 20-year-old denies preparing to plant a device in Downing Street and kill Theresa May in the confusion afterwards. A tree surgeon who shot a man and tried to pin the blame on his 14-year-old son has been convicted of murder. Matthew Mosley, who's 50 and from Accrington in Lancashire, killed Lee Holt in October last year. Donald Trump says a date and location has been set for his meeting with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. He says the details of the summit will be announced soon. Former England captain Steven Gerrard says becoming Rangers manager was a no-brainer. He signed a four-year contract to take over the Scottish Premiership club in the summer. Gerrard's confident he can handle the pressure at Ibrox.
I've been around big football matches. I've watched big managers perform and I've worked under big managers. I can't do nothing about having no experience where to sit right now. And there's only one way to go and get experience, and that is to believe in yourself that you've got the right characteristics to go and take a challenge head on and front it.
Meghan Markle's parents will attend the royal wedding and meet the Queen beforehand. Kensington Palace has also announced her father Thomas will walk her down the aisle later this month. Her mum Doria Ragland will be driven to Windsor Castle with the bride-to-be. That's the latest. I'm Laura Safe.
This is Bristol. It's Friday. It's 6 o'clock. Welcome to the Politics Show. I'm Tony Gosling, helping us review this week's news. Labour councillor for St George Troopers Hill, Fabian Breckles, old Labour Oxford economist Martin Summers is here too. After the 7 o'clock news, elections in Lebanon this weekend and Turkey next month, both key players in the tug of war for Syria. How independent is Lebanon these days? And why has Erdogan decided to call an early election in Turkey? How can the Turks really still be in NATO whilst they're buying the most sophisticated anti-aircraft missiles, the S-400, from Russia? Arguably two of the biggest basket cases in the world. I'm talking about Israel and the warmongering United States. We take a look tonight at these two governments that represent arguably thorns in the side of humanity. Both make a lot of fuss about being democracies, but are they really oligarchies? Where the rich and powerful vet all the possible candidates and the press really decide for people who they want them to vote for? And as Trump finally gets permission to come to Britain on the 13th of July, Washington still seen as the world's policeman. But are they corrupt over the instigators of almost all the wars since the Second World War? What motivates the US? And what about Britain, who created these two basket case countries? Are we two still major players in the conspiracy to undermine the UN right now? Plus Martin Summers' chance to take us on a tour of the world's hotspots. That's all in the second hour after seven. On to our news review in a minute, but first Bristol's two weekend weather forecast from theweatheroutlook.com. Tonight, lows of 11 Celsius and dry. This weekend, highs around 21, mainly sunny all weekend. Lovely bank holiday. And next week, it's highs of 21, cooling down as the week progresses, but mainly sunny. Next weekend, the 12th and 13th of May, highs around 16, so temperatures coming down again and sunny spells. That was Bristol's two weekend weather forecast for theweatheroutlook.com. But great news for the bank holiday. Gosh, I am actually surprised at that. Helping us review this week's news, though, is Labour councillor for St George Troopers Hill, Fabian Breckles. Hi, Fabian. Welcome to the Politics Show.
Hi, thanks for having us.
First of all, Fabian, you've got a bit of explaining to do, haven't you? Usually in a year after a general election, a year or so after a general election, you'd be riding high. All the dreadful things that governments always do to us, you should have been making capital out of that. And actually, last night was not as much as a success as one might have expected.
No, I must admit, I was disappointed with the results, and I think we need to be honest to ourselves about it. We need to start talking to voters up and down the country and listen to them and see what it was that we seem to have got wrong. Obviously, there has been some sort of issues with the anti-Semitism, although digging something... an argument about a mural from 2012 up about 4 weeks before an election seemed a little bit cynical. And then, of course, the Tories should have been paid the price for the Windrush scandal, and it seems they didn't.
Well, they did. They lost the Home Secretary.
They lost the Home Secretary, but they should have been slaughtered in the polls. It does seem that we sit in a very sort of polarised situation where people who vote Labour stay Labour and people who vote support the Conservatives stay there, and there's very little. There used to be sort of floating voters that could swing things. That doesn't seem to exist anymore. It's interesting times. We seem to be sort of stuck in a sort of stalemate.
Why have you failed? Come on, what's your own assessment?
Hard to say, really. I think we have had some successes. We took Plymouth back, but I was up in Swindon last night, and that was the mood on the street. You know, wasn't what I'd have expected if we were going to take Swindon back, and we didn't. And I wasn't massively surprised, given the sort of the body language and the vibe I was getting off the voters I spoke to. So.
Okay, let's have the same question to you, Martin. You've got some explaining to do. Actually, what's happening nationally is that there's been an enormous increase in membership of the Labour Party. There's also a lot of disillusionment with the present government, particularly over stagnation of wages and massive reduction in people's benefits, in public spending. The Conservatives have decided that they're not going to be funding local government anymore, so that's meant an awful lot of services, things like toilets, libraries, etc., closing all over the country. And yet the Labour Party has not managed to take advantage of that.
Well, as you point out, the Labour Party runs all the major core cities, and they're having to make major cuts, and that's part of the strategy of the Conservative government, is to make Labour seem as if they're responsible for those cuts. Mm-hmm. And then that's one of the ways in which this works. The media have been absolutely... I mean, did you see the Sunday Times thing suggesting that Corbyn's or the Labour Party's relative success at the last election was all due to Russian bots, apparently? And that's the media. That's the media we're up against. And changing society is always an uphill struggle. Corbyn and the Labour Party have been demonised in many sections of the media and the press. The UKIP vote collapsed, and those people voted Tory. They didn't come to the Labour Party. And I think if those on the right of the Labour Party think that by taking a more pro-Remain or rather softer Brexit position, we're going to bring those people back, they would be wrong, because that's not going to happen, is it? So in actual fact... Brexit is what's kept the Tory part vote together, and of course Brexit will be what destroys them when it turns out to be a crock of whatever it's going to turn out to be.
Now let's just run through, summarise the results. Of course, no elections here in Bristol, which is a pity, actually. I'll ask you two what you make of that, because we're having all the elections in the city once every 4 years, I think it is now.
Yeah, I think it's...
Rather than spread over several years. And actually what happens is the makeup of the council can change subtly almost every year. That's the way it has been. Now we have to wait 4 years between them.
I think the council system, as well as saving the city an awful lot of money, because running annual elections is extremely expensive, and if you're an activist, you basically don't have a spring. You only have a spring every 4 years, because otherwise you're pounding the streets either for yourself or for a colleague. I think the problem with annual elections and elections by thirds, which is of course what Swindon has still got, is that you have everyone's thinking about the next leaflet, and the decisions that are made in the council are all about the next leaflet, and it's not, you know, it limits the ability to make longer term strategic decisions. And I think sometimes if we're actually going to get ahead of ourselves, we need to be not just worried about the next leaflet, the next campaign, or the next whatever. We need to be thinking longer term. And I think 4-year elections gives the city some stability and gives us an ability to actually get on with the job. And I think that's far better.
Martin, what about the implications nationally? So if there was a general election tomorrow, it doesn't look very good for Corbyn. It doesn't seem like he's lost his, you know, there's this organisation called Momentum, isn't there? He's lost his momentum. He had actually a load of people joining the party, seemed to be on the up, and now that he's run out of steam.
No, if there is a general election tomorrow, the Tories and the Labour Party will be on 35% each. And then there's all the other parties, the SNP, Sinn Féin, who won the by-election in Northern Ireland, and so on. In other words, the Tories, what we have to do actually, we don't have to win a general election, we just have to stop the Tories from winning.
We've got
and
our own.
Then the electoral system will be forced to be changed.
We've got our own by-election coming up, Fabian, haven't we, here?
Yeah, it's a... I wouldn't have exactly called it a Labour target seat. Obviously, we're running a candidate. We'll see what happens. It's Westbury on Trim and Henley. So, I mean, it's usually a red-blue fight. We'll see what happens.
Apparently, the library there is going to stay, it looks like.
Apparently, yes. We shall see. I mean, obviously, the final decisions on all the libraries is yet to be absolutely
I mean, doesn't it
confirmed.
Make sense for Marvin just to close libraries in the Tory areas? Because they're wealthy areas?
It would be a tempting thing to do simply because then you'd say, well, you voted for austerity, so have austerity. Oh dear, you've lost your library. What we need to do, what we're trying to do, is sort of basically damage limitation. We've had effectively 75p in every pound taken from us. I mean, you mentioned about how government isn't central government isn't paying for local government anymore, but they're not exactly giving us the means of recovering that money. So we're having to make swingeing cuts. And, of course, it looks like Labour's making the cuts when actually, the Conservatives taking 75p in every pound. That's a pretty drastic Conservative cut that's impacting, seeing crime rising in my ward across the city. It's seeing, you know, potholes all over the roads. It's seeing everything, you know, teetering on the brink of collapse.
Okay, I'm just going to read out the sort of summary on the BBC site of the local election results, and then I want a final comment from both of you. First of all, actually, with 148 of the 150 councils declared, Labour's won 2,273 seats. That's up 58. Conservatives won 1,300. That's down 30. So actually, overall, the Labour has done actually quite well there. It's won twice as number of seats than the Conservatives have. Lib Dems won up 76, so they did even better than Labour did, and the Greens have won 38. Many of these are gains from UKIP. The Conservatives gained the London Council of Brent from no overall control and lost their Trafford Council after 14 years of Conservative rule, so up in the north not doing very well. Labour had high hopes but have won Plymouth from the Conservatives and gained Kirklees from no overall control, but they've lost Nuneaton, Bedworth and Derby, so gained two and lost three. So it's just
Nuneaton and Bedworth is one authority, so they've gained two, lost two.
Oh, okay, so thanks. All right, thank you. Lib Dems gained four councils, winning neighbouring Kingston-upon-Thames and Richmond-upon-Thames, and South Cambridgeshire from the Tories, and three rivers from no overall control. So the Lib Dems are eating into the Tory vote. The Greens have gained seats, but they didn't win anywhere specifically. UKIP have lost a lot, and Sinn Féin has won Westminster by-election in West Tyrone, so that's West Tyrone MP. But of course, they won't be taking up the seat, Martin.
No, and if you want me to comment on the overall results, I would say that if that was a general election, it would leave the Tories short of an overall majority.
Again.
And therefore, the possibility of a non-Tory coalition, because they can't rely on the DUP. The DUP simply doesn't make up the difference. And we're creeping forwards. We're still going forwards, and they're going backwards.
I think, I mean, looking at these figures, Fabian, actually much of the coverage has been negative, but the Conservatives have taken twice the number of seats than the Conservatives have increased. Labour,
I mean, it's all down to spin and expectation management. But, yeah, I mean, we've had some good wins, and we've had some unfortunate results. I mean, some of it's going to be down to local issues. A councillor does a, you know, really bad, you know, that isn't seen to be doing what people wanted might get a might change hands. Councils that hang on because they've got, you know, a strong, you know, local following and good reputation locally, they can hang on. It's obviously, it was only a limited poll because it's only some councils. There wasn't any vote in Bristol. There's no vote in Wales or Scotland at this time. No vote in Northern Ireland. We shall see what happens next time. So what's interesting is last year when there was the general election, we were in a far, far worse position when the poll was called, and we had a surge. We you know, the Tories thought they were going to get a landslide, and we ended up leaving them with no overall control. We had a brilliant manifesto, fantastic policies. Jeremy Corbyn discovered his inner statesman and started to look and act like a prime minister in waiting. And it just, you know, we just ate into what the Tories thought was landslide.
Look, I'm going to sum up here. That is, Labour won twice the number of seats than the Conservatives, but they were the wrong seats, so they didn't target them properly anyway. Look, let's
go on. That's past the post. That's the voting system.
Yeah, but you've got to target. In thesis, you've got to work with the system. Whatever system you've got to target there. Anyway, let's talk about Metrobus, because we've got the end of the month, 3 weeks' time nearly now, and Metrobus is going to be actually going, and it's going to be free, thank God, for the first couple of weeks, because it looks like it's quite not that going to be very easy to even get a ticket if you wanted one. I've noticed, for example, in the city centre, the display boards for the buses, many of them seem to have been permanently switched off for the last couple of months, so you're not getting information about which buses are coming at all. And I imagine that the idea is that you just then look at the sort of physical time table, and they've got enormous problems with this mTicket app. So the idea is you download this app, although I'm not going to download it, and I wouldn't recommend anybody to download it because of all of the permissions that it's asking for. It literally asks for everything pretty much that you can have on your phone, including the ability to make phone calls from your phone, which I'm not going to give First Group the ability to make phone calls from my phone, or to read my text messages, or to monitor all of the other applications which are running on my phone, or download to their little database, whatever it is, all of the files on my phone, including my contacts on my phone. So these are the things that they're asking for when you download this app. You try it. Go on to whatever it is, Google Play, and it says these are the permissions that this app wants. And it's just about everything. So it's a whole list of things. Now, if you've got nothing secure on your phone that you don't mind handing on to someone to then sell on, then that's fine. Download the app. But then there's another problem, Fabian, isn't there? And I know that you've downloaded this app and you've been trying to use it. I mean, personally, I wouldn't recommend anyone to download it. But you've done that, and how did you get on?
Well, basically, first round, I bought some day riders, and then I could just use them. And you have to sort of, you know, try, you know, and everyone seems to be using it. You know, often see people buying with their phones. But the problem is, when you run out of tickets and I wanted to buy some more, the basket to actually go to the checkout once you've placed your order is invisible. And I actually couldn't, you know, I got an email back. I did sort of complain on social media about this, and they did get back to me and give me a bit of a steer. I haven't tried fixing it yet because, you know, you just think, you know, an app that's a sort of a bit faulty doesn't really fix the problem. Well, you want something that's effortless. I mean, you know.
So what did you do? I mean, if you bought your ticket on the app and you're about to try and use it.
No, I'd actually used up all the tickets on the app. I was trying to buy a fresh ticket on the app and couldn't. So I ended up having to buy a ticket on the bus.
Martin, this is wonderful, this new technology, isn't it? The only problem, of course, is that Metrobus is not going to accept cash at all. You've got to use something like this app in order to get on the bus.
Well, I think I can see that's the way things are going, but it wouldn't suit me. I use the bus rarely, but when I do use it, I want to be able to get on the bus and buy a ticket. We need to rethink all of this. I mean, you know, the Oyster card system in London and so on, we need to be moving in that sort of direction.
We do.
Well, there is something called a smart card, isn't there? First smart card which you can use, which you can kind of load up with tickets.
Yeah,
and then
I've got one of those as well.
Better system?
Much better system, but it would be nice if you could didn't have to just buy it on, you know, pay for it on the bus, you know, because it takes almost as long to reload it. as it does to buy a normal bus ticket, but it does save me some money, so I use it. I think what we need is some kind of Oyster card for Bristol, or we need to move to, you know, contactless system whereby you can use your touch, you know, your cash cards, and if you can cap the fare, so whatever you, however often you travel on a single day, your fare doesn't exceed £4 or something like that. There's got to be the technology out there, because if they can do that with Oyster cards, because Oyster cards preloaded with money rather than tickets, but the amount you can spend on a day is capped. So if the technology exists to do that, the technology ought to exist to do that with your bank cards, so that the system could recognise, oh yeah, this bank card's been used the 7th time today, to, you know, to go back to St George or Southmead or wherever, and just, you know, cap the fare.
I remember, I think it was the former Conservative Euro MP, Richard Cottrell, saying that Bristol is where all great transport projects come to die.
Yeah.
And does seem to me like Metro Bus is absolutely in that tradition of a complete car crash waiting to happen. You know,
it's, do bear in mind it's an inherited system. We couldn't cancel it.
It's head-in-hand stuff, isn't it, Fabian, at the moment? I mean, we've got a width problem on the Eshton Vale line.
Mm-hmm.
How on earth's that happened? So the bus can't go along there because it's the wrong... The contractor has built it the wrong width.
I mean... When you're doing DIY at home, you sort of use a tape measure and you measure up, and then you decide what size stuff you need. You get it cut to size and then you install it. Yeah, you couldn't make it up, could you? The thing to remember is it's an inherited system. George didn't cancel it because there's £200 million of government money tied up with it that couldn't be diverted onto something else. So it was have the Metro bus or don't have anything and don't have the money either. By the time we came in, it was already too far down the road. We've now got to go ahead and finish the job. With something like that,
I would expect, and I don't know who's dealing, I think it's Vari Threlfall that's dealing with transport, isn't it, at the moment, along with Asher Craig on the cabinet. Now,
Vari's the transport lead, yes.
Yeah, this is a contractor's incompetence, right? Number one.
Yeah.
So I would have hoped... And I would have expected that there are penalty clauses in the contract so that the contractor suddenly... So Marvin and Vari and Asher and you and I should all be wringing our hands saying, great, but they've made a mistake. We're going to be quids in. They're going to have to pay us an extra £500,000 or something.
I suspect the contract was inherited like the system was inherited. And if the contract was drawn up by officers...
But they're not penalty clauses then. I mean, this is a basic thing, you know.
They should be...
If you're not going to deliver on time, it's going to cost you, mate. And if you don't like it, don't take the contract. I think I would say that's contractor incompetence, probably. But there's two other major problems, aren't they? The South Bristol Link has been dropped, and the Metrobus is not now going to Bristol Parkway.
Yeah, Bristol Parkway apparently is because of the road width. Well, they should have worked that one out when they started planning it. You sort of work out, you
know. Can they not widen the road? They seem to have widened just about every other road for this Metro bus.
You would have thought so. It is South Gloss.
I mean, if it doesn't go to Parkway...
Parkway is South Gloss. We don't actually have any control over what...
Well, a lot of the route is South Gloucestershire.
Yeah, I know.
But what a disaster. I mean, it's just absolutely ridiculous. And surely whoever is in charge here, whether it's Vari or the South Gloss equivalent, I mean, this shouldn't just say no to the contractors. No, you cannot say we're not going to Parkway.
Mm-hmm. Can I just say, Tony, Capita and Carillion, who subcontract to local authorities all over the country, mm-hmm. are both basically bankrupt.
Well, we know Carillion.
When they collapse, the contracts
Carillion
have been
gone bankrupt.
Yes, and Capita's going bankrupt.
And Interserve is going bankrupt.
Yeah, and
too.
And what we will find when we come to look at the contracts is that they will disappear, having ruined everything, and we won't be able to get the money back. That's what subcontracting means. That's why it's such a shambles.
Yeah, I think you're right. Subcontracting is the problem. If we actually had our own in-house, we're actually able to build it ourselves, you know, even something like a Metrobus, we would be able to take action. If something was messed up, if a bridge wasn't built correctly or something like that, there would be consequences. When it's, you know, when you get all these endless subcontractions, as you rightly say, you know, the who's to blame, who's responsible, who carries the can for this, disappears up the ether.
Also, don't forget, it's their interest to simply cut corners if they think they can. That's why they bid under what Capita have been doing. They've been underbidding for things to make sure they get the contract.
Yeah.
Even when they know very well that they can't probably deliver at that price.
And then surprise, surprise, because they can't deliver at that price.
Well, it doesn't matter. Once you've got the contract, you've got it, haven't you? And then you've got them over a barrel.
Okay. Yeah. Financial Times, 23rd of April. Capita says it's no Serco, whatever the rights and wrongs. It's the night after outsourcing group Capita announced details of a new fundraising strategy. Chief Executive John Lewis is visited in a dream by a rival who did the same a few years back, Rupert Soames of Serco. So there's a sort of jokey piece in the FT about this. They're concerned at the FT about both of these major outsourcing companies. Capita, I don't understand how anybody that collects the London congestion charge, who is getting a fantastic amount of money for almost zero work at all, could even consider going bankrupt. But that's the way that they could be going. They've had a serious profit warning in exactly the same way as this time last year, Carillion were doing exactly the same. And they try and hide these profit warnings so the shareholders don't pull out, so they can keep going.
Yeah, it's the whole thing's a racket, and it does need a complete overhaul. We need to change the way public services are provided. I can't see that happening with this government, though, because you know everything's supposed to be outsourced, even if the outsourcing is to incompetence. I mean, you know, NHS contracts have gone to private companies when the in-house bid was cheaper.
Martin, Capita have announced a massive loss, but the bosses have all been offered a £10 million bonus if they can turn the country round, the company round.
Well, they may have been. I mean, this is the problem with all of this, is that, as I understand it, is they bid low to make sure they get the contracts, because there's no real competition here. Yeah, I mean, and they've become the monopoly suppliers to local government for everything. They don't just do everything. They've brought school meals the lot, you know. And the fact is that the business model is essentially predatory. And then when they go bust, it's like a control fraud. They walk away with the money, and we're left with the mess. And of course, a lot of these contracts have been written up like the PFI contracts, where the state is tied into them for decades to come, so which would never have been, you know, it was absolutely bonkers to do that, but we've done it and we're stuck with it.
And what often happens is you get a situation where the profits are privatised, but the liabilities and the debts.
Absolutely, when it goes down, they just hand it back to the public and pick up. We've got to pick up the bill.
Can we just get back to Metrobus for a minute, because these two decisions over Parkway and the South Bristol Link really are this administration's problem. The contractors have come to them, the bidders have come to them and said, oh, it doesn't look like this is going to work, and Vari 304, Marvin Reeves have said, okay, let's just chop those bits out of the Metro bus. Now that is, surely that's just not acceptable.
Okay, the South Bristol Link routes wasn't on the operator's map, and there's currently no commercial operator.
Well, it was originally, now there isn't. It's just that
they haven't found an operator. It's the one route that's not commercial. The other routes can be sold, run commercially, so a bus company can come along, take on the route, doesn't need any subsidy, and they can run it. The South Bristol one, apparently, until the houses are built down there, doesn't meet that criteria,
so
that's why no one's bid for it.
That's one of the poorer areas in the city.
I know.
So if you're in a poor area, forget it, you're not going to get any decent public transport.
Well, the Metro bus does nothing for East Bristol. I mean, it doesn't go anywhere near us. It goes up the M32, but it doesn't go east of the M32. Not until it's well out of Bristol.
So why has this been accepted by this administration, by Marvin and by Vari? I mean, it does sound like, I mean, is Vari, has she got experience dealing with these big contractors, telling them what to do?
As I've said repeatedly, it's an inherited situation. It's been going on for, Metrobus has been going on for, 10, 15 years, and we've been in power 2 years, so, you know, all the contracts were done and dusted, the routes were settled and all of that, and they'd already started building it by the time we came in, so, you know.
Okay, and carrying on, talking about outsourcing, yes, Interserve, this is the another one of these outsourcing contractors that's in serious trouble. They've just been landed with a £40 million bill from accountants and consultants, so they've got the accountants and consultants in there to try and rescue them, and they haven't actually paid their bills yet, even to the accountants and consultants who are supposed to rescue them. They're trying to pull themselves back from the brink. That's PricewaterhouseCoopers, Ernst & Young are going in there having a good old look around and seeing what they can do, but who knows? They dived 17%, Martin, their company's shares, just in one morning. That was last Monday.
Yeah, well, what may happen...
On Monday this week.
Well, it may happen that all these big subcontractors are going to collapse. And if that had happened 2 weeks ago, before the local elections yesterday, then there might have been a different story to tell on election night.
Yeah.
And the fact is, all of this stuff is in the pipeline, and we'll see what happens when it all comes flooding out into people's kitchens.
Yeah, I mean, eventually, I mean, you think about, I'm thinking back to the sort of early 90s when we had Black Wednesday, when the failure of the then Tory Prime Minister and the then Chancellor of the Exchequer to actually get on meant that there was a huge economic crash. And the idea that the Tories were economically competent was blown, which meant the next election was in the bag for us, whatever we did, just about.
Yeah, and I'm afraid they get the reputation of being good with money because there's a whole cultural thing behind this. They look as if they're good with money. They look as if they're wealthy. And, of course, there's a real deep cultural thing going back generations about this.
Yeah,
but of course,
sense of entitlement.
In actual fact... they are grotesquely. I mean, they lost the country's AAA credit rating during the coalition.
Well, a lot of it is
by
debt.
Trying to cut.
A lot of it is debt. We're running it on debt, isn't it?
Well, the debt's rocketed.
That's
the
right.
Debt has absolutely
what they shuffled. What they do is they constantly rob Peter to pay Paul, and you know, it's a shell game. And until it collapses, people tend to believe them.
But Corbyn hasn't managed to capitalise on that at all.
Well, no,
he hasn't collapsed. I think that's the problem.
Don't forget, he did capitalise on it at the general election last year. We've actually increased our share of the votes since the general election last night. We're not going backwards, we're going forwards. We gained seats last night, the Tories lost seats. But it's being spun as a Labour defeat. Why would that be? Well, the media have got an interest in spinning it in that way, haven't they?
So how long do you think before Interserve and Capita go the way of Carillion then?
Well, I've no idea directly, but the point is that they probably are going to go. The idea that they're going to somehow rescue themselves from this situation is absurd.
You get the idea, Fabian, that they're sort of teetering on the brink, don't you?
Yeah. They do seem to be teetering. We'll just have to see what happens. But as Martin's rightly said, there's no way of knowing exactly when it's all going to fall over. But, you know, it's a house of cards and there's a wind gathering.
Yeah.
Well, the lucky thing is we now have some very well-paid executives here at Bristol City Council, £165,000 apiece. So they better be very good for what we're getting. And I just thought I'd play you a clip from the emergency, or I think it was an extraordinary full council meeting, where the Lord Mayor is chairing. We've got, because we don't get Marvin Rees on this programme, he won't come on here now, but that's the Mayor. But we do have him speaking here and explaining why he thinks the new, it's called Mike Jackson, the person who's just been employed as one of their top executives, why he's worth his £165 million.
And £165,000
£1,000. He's not worth £165 million, that's for sure.
No.
Sorry.
He'd probably get that.
And I have a listen to this. I think it sounds, for me, it sounds pretty shambolic. And his Judy Boston opens by asking some questions about why they're paying this guy so much.
My question has been censored by Bristol City Council.
The reason your question
legal
has been...
services, which is why it's only got one sentence, which is, if Mike Jackson is appointed as Executive Director of Resources and Head of Pay
I'm
Service...
I'm sorry, Julie, you...
No, I haven't had my minute.
Cannot in,
so
no,
will, this, will this amazingly talented man keep 17 public libraries open with the paid staff, reopen the four rent offices, reopen the closed lavatories, reopen the youth clubs, reopen Sure Start centres, reopen the swimming pools, and support Bristol Walking for Health?
Well, what I can say is they will be part of a top team responsible for an organisation with £1 billion budget, over 5,000 staff, and all the descriptions of Bristol I shared. We ran a rigorous selection process, and I think many people across the country will absolutely recognise that. We've not done it simply with Bristol City. It's not even just this administration. We've talked to our city partners. We've talked to the councillors as well, and we believe we've hired someone with the experience and skills we'll be able to deliver for the citizens of Bristol. And shortly, this chamber will have the opportunity to say if they agree.
We will now move to the vote on the report recommendation. Those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Any against, please say no.
Lord Mayor, are you satisfied there's been a decent debate to call a vote? Because I've not actually heard a single member called as part of the debate.
We had a very responsible team who made the appointment. So yes, I'm happy that we should go ahead.
Have you called any members to see if they wish to debate the motion? I mean, for the motion to be a valid vote, there does actually have to be a debate. Yeah. I was part of the selection team. I'm very confident in the selection we made. I'm just, the democratic process should be followed. That's all.
The report said it was a unanimous decision by the committee. So I'm happy that it should go ahead.
Lord Mayor, I think one of the questions that the public are asking is about the salary rather than in the individual. And I think that there should be opportunity for people to pass comment, should they wish.
So those in favour have said aye. Any against, please say no. It's carried then, and that is the end of the meeting. Thank you.
So that's the Lord Mayor, Leslie Alexander there. It's just sounded so shambolic. First of all, we're hearing that the team have made the appointment, and yet everybody has to be called to the council chamber, Fabian, in order to just ratify it, but there's no debate allowed.
I didn't actually go. I thought, well, I can't affect the outcome, so what's the point of me being there? I stayed in work because...
It was a bit Kafkaesque, actually. I mean, to hear the Lord Mayor saying the team has made the appointment and then everyone has to come here and then just have to hold their hands up and vote. There's no discussion or debate allowed.
I have to be careful how I say it, but I think the Lord Mayor, current Lord Mayor, has struggled. I mean, obviously we get a new Lord Mayor later this month on the 22nd at the annual full council.
That's Cleo Lane. Lake.
Yeah. Cleo Lake, yep. And we'll see how she gets on.
But I mean, you know, and there was questions during that about governance. I think it was Jeff Gollop was raised questions about governance. Just sounds to me like it's not being done in a very professional manner. But anyway, I suppose that's just the way it is. Look, we're going to go now to look at some of the national issues. We've got some local stuff to talk about as well. But let's just get straight to the point here with the Jeremy Corbyn on Wednesday. And I suppose he's thinking about the local elections when he's asking his ultimate question to Theresa May. Main point really being the massive loss in the numbers of police officers in the country. And let's discuss how you thought you'd get on after this.
Jeremy Corbyn.
Mr. Speaker, our shadow police minister was pointing out that there's been a £2.3 billion cut in police budgets in the last Parliament, and it's her government that is underfunding our police force. 21,000 police officers have lost their jobs since 2010. 6,700 police and community support officers lost their jobs. In the meantime, violent crime is rising, and sadly, there are deaths from knife crime on the streets of most cities, particularly in London. Mr. Speaker, the economy is slowing, homelessness is rising, more children are living in poverty, the Home Office in chaos, and the government making a complete shambles of the Brexit negotiations. They're damaging our NHS, damaging our children's schools, cutting police as crime scores. Mr. Speaker, they claim to be strong and stable. With council tax rising by more than 5% all over the country, isn't the truth? The truth, Mr. Speaker, facing voters tomorrow is that with the Tories, you pay more and you get less.
Going into the NHS, more funding going into our schools, more funding going into social care. But if he wants to talk about council tax and the impact of council tax on local residents, well, I suggest he goes to Hazelbourne Road in Clapham. On one side of the road, in a typical home, someone will pay nearly £1,400 in council tax. Now, that, of course, is in Labour-run Lambeth. On the other side of the road, someone in a typical home will pay just over £700 in council tax. That's in Conservative-run Wandsworth. Conservative councils cost you less.
And I guess that's one of the things that was in people's minds when they were voting on Wednesday. But Martin, one of the results, and I think Jeremy Corbyn was right to talk about the loss of police numbers. Just to remind you folks, it's 21,000 less police officers and 6,700 less PCSOs, a reduction in £2.3 billion in the annual budget for the police. And we had a discussion about knife crime, didn't we, where you were saying, oh, I don't think knife crime's up. Actually, the figures 2 weeks ago came out. There's been a huge increase in knife crime, with nearly 40,000 around England and Wales now. That's the rate it is. And knife crime has soared by over 20% across England and Wales in 1 year. London is they're describing it as an epidemic, where the murder rate in 1 year has increased by 44% just in the 1 year. Now, surely we can put two and two together and make four here. It's the police numbers that have meant this massive increase in violent crime.
Well, I mean, if we had the Police Federation people on here, they would absolutely agree with that. And of course, it certainly doesn't help. It's not the only thing that's going on, but it's certainly important.
It's almost exclusively in Labour-controlled areas. Generally speaking, we're talking about poorer areas where this crime is.
Well,
really,
but what's happening is that the social and political infrastructure in poorer areas is being destroyed. And of course, the people who live in leafy Wandsworth pay less council tax, and that's because they haven't got the same problems as they've got in Lambeth, and that's the reality. And of course, more and more the wealthy suburbs are pulling away from the poorer communities, and the poorer communities.
Let me just reiterate these figures before you answer, Fabian, because this is a pretty serious increase, isn't it? Police in England and Wales recorded 40,000 offences involving blades in the year ending December 2017, a 22% increase on the previous year. London saw a 44% increase in the number of killings, with more than 150 victims, while the number of knife offences in the capital rose by over 20% to 14,700.
Well, I mean, we've lost about 700 officers in the Avon and Somerset area alone, and our crime rates figures are going up. The Tories are failing to protect the public. They're failing to keep ordinary people safe. And it's interesting, when Theresa May pulled that stunt about this road between Lambeth and Wandsworth, I seem to recall the Tories pulled a stunt like that back in the early 80s. And the problem we've got, and it's been pretty blatant, is that they will deliberately underfund and cut funding to Labour areas more severely than they will Conservative areas. So, you know, Surrey and places like that will get plenty of money, and but you won't, you know. And it's bordering on corruption. I mean, you know, well, everyone
I was reading about free schools, for example. The average spend per pupil in free schools is double what in ordinary
and
schools.
They fail.
And that's money that they're taking away from ordinary schools.
Yeah, which are falling apart.
Can I just say something about the, you know, what's behind the actual driving the knife crime? A lot of it is organised crime. It's gangster related stuff, largely to do with drug dealing. And actually, this increases when you've got mass unemployment, and also when people have their benefits taken away.
Yep.
Suddenly, it's much more lucrative to just say, "Oh, well, I'll steal a bit of deal a few drugs."
Well, I mean, there's a bigger issue about the drugs and whether they should be legalised or decriminalised and so on, but that's another issue.
But it seems to me this economy is almost framed for organised crime.
Well, what's happening
is
an underclass is developing, which is completely excluded from most of mainstream society, and it's developing different values and different ways of settling its... And, of course, a lot of this crime, knife crime, is actually young lads, so it's not even organised crime. We're talking about young people who really are becoming lost to society. And that's what we were talking earlier about schools. The youth service has been cut to nothing. There is no youth service in Britain anymore. It's just gone. And of course, in the past, people would be going out to try and engage with these
young
people.
And if you're wondering why you haven't heard our Mayor, Marvin Rees, talking about some of these issues, one of the reasons may be his various detractors are saying about him, that is from the other parties. He's defensive, he's fudged his pledges, he's divorced from reality. This is how opposition parties view Marvin Rees' first 2 years, because of course he's halfway through his term as mayor. The various group leaders, Bristol Mayor Marvin Rees, may have a rosy view of his achievements, achievements at the halfway point of his elected term, says the Bristol Post, but it's fair to say his political opponents don't agree. From a lack of delivery to fears over financial transparency, the leaders of the Conservative, Green and Lib Dem groups have been upfront in their criticism of the mayor. I'll put a link to that story on our show page at thisweek.org.uk. But at the end of the day, folks, we've also got this other story this week about the lack of accountability over a plan to bring in a non-elected chair of audit. I mean, audit is one of the most important scrutiny roles in the city council. How can we even contemplate having somebody that is not from one of the, for example, one of the opposition parties put there?
I think I have to agree with my colleague, Councillor Ollie Mead. I think that we should keep this situation as we've got it and have an elected, have a chair of audit that is a elected councillor. And it was interesting that, you know, it seemed, you know, post-Bunjid, he was saying that we seem to be having, you know, more scrutiny of councillors rather than more scrutiny of officers. And, of course, you know, you have to remember the car crash we inherited, you know, £30 million hole in the finances on top of the massive amounts of cuts we get from government funding because somebody didn't have their eye on the ball during the last administration, or a number of people didn't have their eye on the ball during the last administration. So it has taken a while to sort of clear that mess up.
So is this going to happen? Are we going to get a... I mean, I love this word independent, because they're always independent.
We haven't...
They end up being, or quite often, someone who's the choice of the mayor.
I think it's much better. I think it's much better that we have an elected person who, you know, an elected councillor doing it, because councillors are accountable. They have to face the public and get re-elected. And I think that's, you know, that's the best way of doing it. So I think...
Is it going to work? Is it going to happen? This, are we going to get an appointed auditor?
I don't think it's been any decision's been set in stone yet.
To hear that, because this is one of the things.
You know, we are looking at improvements to the constitution, which are needed, and that's one of the ones that's still being considered. We haven't firmly decided. It's a suggestion. I'm hoping it doesn't go ahead.
Let's certainly hope not. Anyway, back to Prime Minister's questions, and we're going to hear now about universal credit, that wonderful central government plan, even though it doesn't seem to be doing all that well, it doesn't seem to be working very well.
Martin Doherty Hughes.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Evidence of the inhumane and cruel impact of the government's flagship universal credit policy is clear for all to see. Its impact has been devastating, and the Prime Minister can no longer bury their head in the sand as they have done with the Windrush scandal. Therefore, Mr. Speaker, will the Prime Minister get a grip, take action to protect families from being forced further into crisis, or does the Prime Minister simply believe that the damage being done to the poorest and most vulnerable in our communities is a price worth paying?
Yeah. Say to the Honourable Gentleman, we have been rolling out universal credit. We have been doing it at a pace which ensures we have been able to hear from those who've been affected by it and to make changes. And changes have been made in the way that universal credit is introduced in this country. We have ensured that we've taken out that 7 days of waiting time, for example. But what lies behind universal credit is the belief that actually the important thing for families to help sustain them is to get people into work. The evidence of universal credit is doing just that. It is helping people into work. And I would have thought the Honourable Gentleman should welcome a policy that helps people to get into the workplace.
Helping people into work for organised crime, maybe.
Well, also, it's helping people out of housing. So it's maybe getting them into work, but it's also getting them out of one of the fundamental flaws is the payment is paid directly to the recipient, and they won't pay to landlords. Landlords have made it clear, private sector landlords, that they won't rent to people on universal credit, which is why the homelessness figures have been shooting up, and why, incidentally, they've not been able to roll it out around the country. It was all supposed to be completely in full swing by now, but everywhere they've rolled it out, it massively increases homelessness, and of course the gap between people signing on and getting their money, if you haven't got access to other money, that you end up massively in debt. So it's massively increased indebtedness, increased homelessness, it's badly designed, and they won't change it, because otherwise Ian Duncan Smith would get upset, and he can't be upset, because otherwise Theresa May might lose
her position. I mean, the idea surely is to take people's money away to make life difficult for them, so they have to get a job.
Well, I mean, or go into get involved in crime or sleep on the streets, and that's where we're ending up.
I remember being in and out of temping when my first job after I graduated collapsed, and I'd already arrived in Bristol at the time, and it just felt then, before Universal Credit, that the system was about making it as hard as you possibly could. If I did a couple of days temping work, I'd lose more in benefits than I'd actually earn going out and working. So it was actually about stopping you getting off the ground. It was kicking you down when you were down. And this is even worse.
Every pound is taken.
Yeah, this is even worse. This is a wicked, wicked system designed to impoverish the already poor and vulnerable. What we need to be looking at is something radical like a citizen's income, where we actually get rid of absolute poverty. And then, you know, then there's the incentive. Then work will always pay. If you've got a citizen's income, then even if you're going to only get a couple of days' work a month, It's worth your while to do it. That's how you make work pay.
That the people in receipt of these benefits aren't Tory voters. The Conservatives
that's
just right. don't care.
That's the whole idea.
That's absolutely right. These people don't matter because the electoral system means that they don't matter. It's very hard for us to motivate these kind of excluded people. But even if we motivate them and get them involved in the system, it just stacks up votes where we were already.
But at
get
least
it.
If you're really sick, you're really ill, you phone 999 for an ambulance. Maybe you've had a heart attack. Maybe something else has happened. At least the ambulance is there for you. Or is it?
Helen Jones.
When one of my constituents had a heart attack, he waited an hour and 20 minutes for a paramedic and 2 hours for an ambulance because they were having to queue up at local hospitals. He never made it back home. Faced with such a human tragedy, does the Prime Minister feel any pang of conscience for the shambles she has created in our NHS?
Can I say to the Honourable Lady that she sets out what is obviously a very sad and tragic case in relation to her constituent. I'm happy to look at the issues at the background of what led to that particular outcome being the result. We all want to make sure that patients are able to be treated in the NHS when they need that treatment and get the appropriate treatment. That's why we have been putting that extra money into the NHS. But as I say, it's a very sad case that she's outlined, and I'm happy to look at the details of it.
Gloria De Piero.
Mr. Speaker, last Saturday night, an 83-year-old woman had a fall at home and was bleeding from a head wound. She waited for an ambulance for nearly 3 hours. Will the Prime Minister apologise to my constituent and promise the rest of the country that no one else's elderly mum will suffer like this?
Yeah. Can I say to the Honourable Lady that if she would like to give details, more expansive details of the case, then I know that the Secretary of State will Health will look very closely into the case that she's identified. I'm sorry to hear of the circumstances of her constituent, but we will look into the case.
The thing to bear in mind with what's happening with the NHS is this is deliberate. Your relative doesn't come back because they're waiting too long for an ambulance to pick them up and take them to A&E because they've had a heart attack. That's deliberate. The government is deliberately destroying the NHS. They've never the Conservatives have never, ever supported. They opposed it when it's being set up in 1947. They've never, you know, never had any time for it. This is all deliberate. You know, when David Cameron put that poster up, I'll cut the deficit, not the NHS, that was a massive, massive, massive lie. It was already about destroying the NHS as soon as they got the chance.
Martin, if you have a heart attack, you're elderly, you can wait 2 hours before an ambulance turns up. And if you've got a bleeding, serious head wound, you're also elderly, 3 hours.
Well, I'd like to focus a bit on the so-called deficit. But for years, we were told that there's no money, and therefore we've got to cut back on the NHS, on police numbers, and all the things we've been talking about in this show. Mm-hmm. But the fact of the matter is, that was just a lie. There was no real reason for that. And at the same time, we bailed out the banking system, which is where all these people actually go when they've left politics and all the rest of it. And the bonuses in the City of London are as big as ever. And asset prices of the wealthy classes in this country have been booming, and they've all got richer, and that money is our money,
which should have been spent on the things that we needed. But instead, it was given by political decision to the wealthiest people in the country. The top rate of tax was cut at the same time as saying there's no money. How can you do that and get away with it? Well, in this country you can, because I'm afraid we're a country of serfs and peasants.
I mean, is this a lot of this the fault of the London media?
It is partly fault of the media, because the media constantly distort the choices that society faces. And therefore, you know, people have no real idea what money spent on what. We could spend a fortune on Hinkley C and it'll all go down the drain, disappear, cost billions, and nobody call that waste. But they see waste when they see a single mum who's got two kids. And, you know, you're not allowed to have three kids anymore in Britain, because we won't pay for the third kid. And that means, what sort of a society is it where we say things like that? Meanwhile, of course, the wealthy classes,
like
as
China.
I say...
China, isn't it?
Well, the wealthy classes in this country have not had a crisis. There has been no crisis for them. Their house prices have risen in the lower echelons, and in the higher echelons, they've made a mint out of the crisis.
OK, final clip from Prime Minister's questions, and it's our goodbye Amber Rudd, Home Secretary.
Mm. Amber Rudd!
Opportunity to congratulate my right honourable friend for Bromsgrove on his appointment. Yeah. Yeah. Such an important department, not only in terms of security, but also in terms of ensuring we have a safe and fair immigration policy. Yeah. Could I add, Mr. Speaker, that the UK threat level remains at severe. Last year, we had 5 terrorist attacks that got through and 36 innocent people that were killed. Could I invite the Prime Minister to share with me our admiration for the extraordinary work and bravery that is done by our counter-terrorism for policing, our emergency services and our security services, which I know we are all grateful for.
Can I first of all say to my right honourable friend that I'm pleased to be able to have this opportunity to pay tribute to her and the work that she did as Home Secretary. She did valuable work across all elements of the Home Office, including issues like modern slavery and domestic violence. The work my right honourable friend did with the internet companies in terms of keeping people safe on the internet was groundbreaking. And can I also share with her the support and admiration for the work that all in our emergency services, in our police, in our counter-terrorism police, and in our security and intelligence agencies do, for all that they do to keep us safe, and also commend her for the work that she did following the terrorist attacks last year to set in train action to ensure that we continue to make sure that those services get the support they need to be able to continue to keep us safe.
Well, this is the praise Amber Rudd speech, but in actual fact, Sajid Javid taking over, he's a pro-Brexiteer, it's tipped the cabinet in the other direction and created a crisis, actually.
And Amber Rudd was the fall person for Theresa May. She started this hostile immigration policy all right from the word go. So ultimately, it's Windrush is her fault.
It's time now for the Murdoch News at 7. Thanks to our guests. You just heard there, Labour Councillor for St George, Troopers Hill, Fabian Breckles. Join us after the news as we do our best to keep ahead of the curve.
This is Bristol's BCFM on 93.2, online and on your mobile. BCFM is an award-winning community radio station for Bristol, bringing you national news on the hour, live from the Sky News Centre.